Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris, and on this episode, I have a special interview with Jamie Carragher and Peter Schmeichel. We caught up with the two legends about their work for CBS Sports' coverage of the UEFA Champions League, which returns on Tuesday, and it's also available, of course, on Paramount Plus. We discuss their memories of the first soccer matches they have attended as football supporters, their thoughts on why Premier League clubs don't do as well in the UEFA Champions League as some of the other countries, and their take on the level of soccer knowledge that American fans and broadcasters possess, as well as a lot of other questions too. So sit back and enjoy the interview with Jamie Carragher and Peter Schmeichel. The first question I've got for you both is, what was your first memory of the very first professional football match you went to as a supporter?
I remember mine. Mine was at Goodison Park, and Everton had just won the FA Cup, and they played the first home game of the following season. And they lost 85 to Tottenham. Yes, well, that was, it was the 84-85 season. So that was 1984. I watched that game, and those two teams ended up challenging for the title. Everton won, lost their first two games of the season. They lost the second game away at West Brom, and then they won the third game away at Chelsea 1-0, and then went on to win the league title by beating Tottenham away from home in maybe April 2-1. So that was the first game of the season, 4-1 to Tottenham, Glenn Hoddle and all. And yeah, so it was a bad one, but it ended up being a great season.
So what about you, Peter?
I grew up a little bit different. We didn't have professional football by law. The law was changed when I was 15, and Danish football wasn't really great. So I followed English football. But my first really, really big game I went to was in 1984. Again, same here, but that was the European Championship, Denmark playing Spain in the semi-finals. And I had just started out as a semi-professional myself. And I left Copenhagen by bus on a coach. Coach rides to Lyon. Lyon was, so it's like 20 hours on a coach. And we came to Lyon about 2 hours before kickoff. So into the stadium, watched the game. Unfortunately, we lost it in penalties, and that was straight back on the coach, and then back to Copenhagen. So again, 20, 21 hours. And we came back. I didn't have much sleep. And in that that day we came back, I had to play a cup game. It was called Carlsberg Cup in Denmark against Brøndby, and we lost 7-1. So I clearly remember that game, and I of course ended up playing in Brøndby, and the guy who holds the records for the most appearances, he in that game he scored 2 goals, and I played there for 4.5 years with him, and I can remember just 1 goal that he scored in that time, and in 1 game against me he scored 2. So I remember my first game, which was a great adventure, but it was a big disappointment, and then that game coming back.
So Peter, your childhood dream was to play for Manchester United. What was the level of coverage like in Denmark when you were growing up? Was it on television all the time, or?
Yeah, so what we had was, so the BBC that was covering all the games back then, and then showing highlights of match of the day in the UK, they would broadcast one of the 3 o'clock kickoffs to the world, and it was kind of very random which game it was, the main game. So we would sit there. So that would happen from when the Danish season finished, which was quite early in the autumn, and they were allowed to do that all the way to, or show them all the way till it began again. So we would have every winter, would have every Saturday, just sit there, and it started. So the kickoff was 4 o'clock, but the program, the whole build up, started at 12, and of course went on. It was, so everyone just sat there watching, and of course we fell in love with English football. Everyone I know loves English football. Everyone I've played with, and we had our teams. You know, we supported our teams. Most of the guys at the time, because it was Liverpool and Leeds who was kind of the best teams at the time, became Liverpool Leeds supporters. I became a Manchester United supporter. I was the only one at the time. And it just became my dream. This is what I wanted. I wanted to play football in those, you know, in those stadiums, in front of those people. And it's funny because when I eventually, you know, played my first game, was Goodison. It was Goodison Park, my first away, not first game, but first away game. And Goodison Park became my favorite away ground from that game. And it's still like that. It's still the same. 30 years on, it's still the same. Same atmosphere. People are still this close. So
what was the score of that one, Peter? Was that a victory? Was that a win at Goodison?
We won. I can't remember exactly. I can't remember. We won the first four that year. I honestly can't remember. I can remember a couple that we lost, but I can't remember the ones we won.
So fast forwarding to 2023, right, with the January transfer window just closed, the gulf in spending in the transfer market between the Premier League and the rest of Europe. Do you think there's some incentive or motivation for the clubs that are not in the Premier League, that are in the Champions League in the next few weeks, to show that they're actually maybe perhaps the better teams on the pitch rather than not in the kind of the bank account balance?
Yeah, I agree. I think when we talk about the money that's spent in the Premier League, I think we've also got to remember that a lot of the clubs who are receiving these fees, I think sometimes they lack Premier League, and that they, you know, they're getting a lot of money in from the Premier League. They've been a lot cleverer with their own money in terms of transfer fees and players that they're bringing in. And you still look at the record. I've said for a long time, the expenditure in the Premier League means that we should really be dominating that competition as a league. And we still haven't fully got to grips with it in terms of a domination. That I think Peter's probably a perfect example. So many young people around Europe and the world grew up watching English teams dominate Europe in that sort of late 70s. It was Liverpool, Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest. And I was expecting this to happen over the next sort of the last few years and the next few years. And it hasn't quite happened. We've obviously had Liverpool and Chelsea, and it always feels like they've been an English team in the final now. But it still feels like Real Madrid have got that stranglehold on the competition. And they do spend big money, but for often you still look at them as a team and think it's an aging team, but they find a way to win in this competition. But I do feel sooner or later the Premier League will get its claws really into the Champions League and start dominating the competition and maybe winning, you know, 3 out of 5 or something. You can't win it every year. But I think with the money and the amount of teams we have in it, we should be expecting an English team to win it or at least get to the final every year now.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because working with CBS Sports, I mean, obviously you both work for other broadcasters around the world, both currently in the past. What would you say is the biggest difference working with CBS Sports and doing the UEFA Champions League coverage compared to other broadcasters that you currently or have worked with in the past?
For a country like America, who has four very, very big sports that dominates the sort of the television screening, if you like, and has done for years, for a broadcaster like CBS to go in and really invest as they've done and really, really try to push this this product into that sort of picture. They, of course, doesn't come in with a European way of seeing or doing it or producing TV sports shows, if you like. So I have to say we're very stuck in the way that we produce shows. I mean, you go from country to country, they very much looks the same. Comes down to the individuals on the show, how and what direction it takes, how serious it is, how qualified it is. But in all, so in general, it kind of looks the same from every broadcaster, really. But then you have an American input to what we've done for years, and all of a sudden you have a dynamic that takes it somewhere else. We do what we do. We are asked to do something that they want to do, and then all of a sudden you have this product which is different to what we do normally, and sometimes it doesn't work, but this has worked. This has worked really well, and it's interesting to work with. I've worked for 20 years now with a lot of different broadcasters, and I have to say mainly from in the UK, of course. But if it's been outside of the UK, it's more been to the eastern side of the world, so more into Asia, and not really the Americans. And this has been it's been a revelation. Also, what it has been for. If you've been in the business for that long, it's keeping you on your toes a little bit. You have to produce something in order to stay with it and be relevant and all that. So it's, for me personally, it's been good that it's kind of had this change and a different way of looking at broadcasting, sports broadcasting. That is, sorry.
Sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Peter's saying. For me, I love the contrast I have from working with Sky and working with CBS. It feels like it's a different show, completely different in that it's a football stroke entertainment show. I think people seem to enjoy it. And I think we get a nice balance between, certainly in the knockout stage, between analysis before the games and then really enjoying ourselves after the game. And I think when you're in TV, me and Peter have done it for lots of different stations. It's nice to do different things and not do the same thing every show you go on, no matter who you're working for. And that's why for me, working CBS, I absolutely love it. I've missed it. Really looking forward to getting back in with the guys in the next few weeks. And obviously we've got a long, because the season's crammed together, it'll feel like we're together most weeks then. And it just gives me something different than what I do on Sky, which still gives me that buzz and sort of, edge, if you like, really, that I'm still enthusiastic for it.
Do you think it's changed your perception of Americans or Americans' knowledge of football or soccer in any ways, in terms of now that you're working with a US broadcaster, where in the past perhaps you might have had a different perception?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's been quite a pleasant surprise, I have to say, that the knowledge of football in the US, it's much, much bigger than I thought it was. It's much better. The following is incredible. We see that in our viewing figures, and we see that on the response. And it's great. It's great because we've always considered our sport as a world sport. This is not for Europe. Yes, the biggest clubs are in Europe. It's more developed in Europe in terms of the quality, if you like, but it's a sport that is enjoyed everywhere in the world. And for a long time, we didn't think it was enjoyed in the US, but we found out it is. So it's quite good. So my perception has changed for sure.
And last question I've got is, Jamie, do you see that Peter Schmeichel maybe is a kind of a kinder, gentler, maybe more intelligent version of a fellow Manchester United former player, Gary Neville?
Of course he is.
I'm recording.
Gary Neville wouldn't suit the audience. He's got no light or shade. Peter's got the analytical side of it. Obviously, one of the best goalkeepers in the world has ever seen. Really fun as well. So we don't have that privilege on English TV with Mr. Neville. He's quite analytical, but as Peter knows himself, he's not the type of fella you would want to go to a party with or go for a drink with. So Destination Brooklyn would certainly not have been for Gary Neville. So I think I've got the right Manchester United man for English TV. I've got the right Manchester United man for the US.
Oh my God. you are a brave man, by the way. If he hears this.
Excellent. Well, Jamie and Peter, thank you so much, guys. Good luck next week. And yeah, it's been great talking to you. Great.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.